We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Astrology and Transpersonal Living, Part 3 by Dane Rudyar. This was the opening presentation of the 1983 RITA Conference in Palo Alto, California. This recording is 32 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudyar.
Since it's the fall equinox, there's some urgency that I ask this question. There is, I would think, some risk in entering this new realm of activity. For example, let's assume that I'm neurotic half the time, and we're given a powerful tool, let's say particularly in the use of the mandala, and I get out into these realms, these new realms. Right? Could Rudyar comment on the risk?
Did you hear what I was saying?
Comment on the risk of,
on the risk of being a neurotic person in the world, having such tools like astrology and, for example, the Sabian symbols in astrological mandala, the risk and the dangers inherent in that position.
Yeah, sure. Don't you think Jesus took lots of risks? I mean, not our comparison, but I mean, anybody who is bringing to humanity a new idea. And again, that's not, I'm not trying to bring a new idea in a sense, but I mean, anything is a risk, I mean. I know Mark Jones, who was the one who was instrumental with another woman to bring out the original brief Sabian symbol, told me several times, and I said, well, I wasn't going to give it very much importance, but you brought them to the public in American Astrology in series of articles and all that, and Astrology of Personality, so that's your karma. I said, good luck with it. And I said, well, thank you. I'm perfectly able to realize it. But then, so what? I mean, you wouldn't do anything. Anything you can do in our present world can cause trouble. I mean, think of anybody, anybody who started something. I mean, you know, and the more you are dealing, the more you are starting something in a period of accelerated change, the more, of course, you're into trouble. A close friend and teacher of mine, a very remarkable, very fine Parsi Hindu, had a very significant statement saying that, the Hindu speaks of the four ages. It's like the Greek golden age, silver age, bronze age, and iron age. Kali Yuga is the last one, Iron Age. They call it the Age of Darkness. And he said, nobody can do anything to Kali Yuga, but there is a great deal that anyone can do in Kali Yuga. In other words, when anything breaks down, there is a lot you can do. But if you lived in the period of the Inquisition, And in the 17th century or something like that, there's not too much you can do along certain lines without being immediately burned. Or if you are in a certain totalitarian country today, there's nothing very much you can do. But when the thing is breaking down, when everything gets loose, you see, then you can either decay or become a seed, as it were. That is your responsibility. But then that's the response. You are born that time. That's your fault. That's not mine.
Well, what about my children? giving the tool to my children.
Well, why do you make children? I mean, you know, that's again, it's your responsibility, you know. If they do, if you don't give that, the idea of education is to tell, that's something again I said several times and which made lots of people raise their eyebrows. Education is a process, or should be a process, by means of which you tell children, you teach children, or you acquaint children with everything that humanity has done before they were born, and then tell them, but you are a damn fool if you do the same thing. In other words, you have to know what is back of you in order to go forward significantly. One of the tragedy of the modern youth in America is that they refuse to learn history. But refusing to learn history is to condemn oneself to repeat it. There is nothing that can be done without knowing why you don't do the thing that somebody else does. You cannot leave your culture if you don't realize why you don't want to stay in it. And you, if you don't want to stay in it, you have to try to understand what's wrong with it. And what's wrong with it can only be known if you see how it became wrong. It may be that at the origin it was fine. The gospel seems to be beautiful things, but what happened to them? No. Yeah?
When you talked about your life in France and how you awakened to the decay of French and European civilization, I was struck by the similarity of that process to my own coming from Europe to America, and was following the sequence of emotions to mind to will to make a basic life choice, which I have done.
Uh-huh.
My question is that a life decision that carries you through life, or is that a decision or a sequence of emotion, mind, will that one has to go through several times in life?
Well, one always thinks when you are in your 20s that you have already done it or that you have almost finished with it. I have, years ago, when I saw quite a few people with astrological and consultation, I found myself with young people of 20, 21 coming in desperate. I have wasted my life. I'm finished. There's nothing. I looked at her. I said, now look. You haven't even started. But then I realized that I was writing a lot of poetry. And I remember some poem that I wrote when I was in the mid-20s and saying, my own, I forgot exactly the word now, like a dying flower, my ego is gone, and things like that. And then I said, 15 years later, I said, that's so nice. No, I'm afraid you have to redo things many times. But the first basic process, I mean, it's really that. But in the process of finding the alternative, you have to pass very often to many sequences of excitement over an alternative, then trying to understand it, finding out it's not so good after all, then fighting against the decay of it, having to severe severance from it, and then starting again. I mean, sure, you have to do that. But that's life, I mean, you know. Keep moving, you know. Zen was defined by a Zen master. Move on, walk on. And I think it's the best thing of life. Walk on. And walk, you know, it's a mysterious thing. In order to take a step ahead, you have to fall. you have a position of equilibrium, you lose it, you're almost falling, then you catch yourself on the floor, and then you start again. If there were no floor, you would keep falling. But you have to accept that. It's difficult because we are very lazy people. And we wish that there is dad who would tell us exactly what is true, and mother would give us, oh, fine, fine, go on, do it. And when, of course, we transfer the mom and the dad to guru or to something else or a book or whatever it is, and then we move step by step. And sometimes we stay there the rest of your life, sometimes we keep moving. I mean.
Would you comment on the difference between taking a step that may result in what we would call a mistake versus not taking the step because we fear making a mistake?
Yeah, well, that's of course very often the case. I mean, fear is a very powerful thing, and it is actually the cause of all evil. I mean, I think one of the first articles I wrote in English was for a theosophical magazine in India, which was called Inertia, the source of all evil, or something like that. And inertia is the refusal to change. Well, now that refusal to change is inbred in biology. I mean, biological structure are kept from disorganized changing, you see, by conservatism, a genetic conservatism, you might say. And that's fine at the biological level, but it supposedly keeps the lemming from going over the sea, because that's the way their ancestors did before there was no sea there. So with man is the possibility to not follow the line of inertia, but to go on. But you see, this is the thing that you find in all religion. There is always, well, I don't know, I should say that. Well, I suppose you can almost say there is always two kind of people. The people mentioned, the people who follow the pattern of the divine revelation in the beginning, which you might say the genetic code for their type of humanity or race or culture, and the people who are the Promethean spirit, the Luciferian spirit, who don't agree that it's the thing that is forever and ever to be the same, but who want to go from that, the ground on which you fall, in order to rebound from. You see? But of course, for most people, there is no bound there. They don't rebound, they keep falling. And so sometimes, supposedly, God pushes you and you find yourself in hell. But that's, of course, questionable interpretation. But you find that all throughout, you find it in theosophy, find it in Hindu philosophy, the suras and the asuras, and the people who are the maker and shakers of the world, and who just simply don't keep on changing all the time. And it's rather not nice for one's follower, because then they become confused, you see. I'm afraid that's one of the karma I have supposed to carry, because I have changed so much. And yet, at the same time, actually, you will find that that change is actually merely a change of focus. That actually the basic concept, which I started let's say, at 16, is quite unchanged at 88. Well, not 72 years, I mean, it's not so bad after all. It's a period that it takes for a degree of precession to move on. You know. Yes?
I'm confused.
Are you? Well, you are not the only one, I'm sure.
There's something that you said before about laziness and about how astrology can mislead one into laziness. I wasn't sure what you meant by that.
At what? I'm
sorry. Astrology can mislead one into laziness.
If you let it?
If you let astrology mislead you, it can contribute to your laziness. I think what he said.
I don't think I said that exactly.
I think what he was talking about was saying that you always have to look at what is possible, but I think the general meaning was that even if something appears, it can be that something seems to be impossible, but you must not let that become an excuse for laziness.
Oh yeah, that's
astrology, and in that sense, I think it was possibility. Lots of S's and three syllables.
No, because you see, if you find, let us say that you have a feeling, well, now that's only one aspect of so-called modern astrology, but that's not the whole picture, but it will give you an idea. I remember somebody coming to me once, and a young man wanted to know what he should do, because, which of course you should never ask of an astrologer, but anyway, because he felt he had a religious vocation, he wanted to go in the clergy. But his mother, who had studied modern psychology and the Gauquelin statistics, told him that he didn't have Saturn in the right place to become a successful clergyman. So that was the wrong decision he would make. Well, it wasn't an easy decision to make, because he had been in love with a girl and all that, and it was a conflict within him, but he thought that after all, that was really the thing that he should do, to be in religion. But then his mother told him, astrology said that you shouldn't. So he said, okay, then all right, that's fine, I won't do it. I mean, in other words, if you take the idea that something is not seemingly possible, which may mean that it is not possible in the way you think it should be done, you see, and then you can say, well, fine, all right, I won't do it. Take the easy way out, you know. Now, if, for instance, you find that a certain situation or a certain process that you might indulge in, that a process that you might want to go through is characterized in astrology by a square of Mars and Saturn, or something like that, or a conjunction of Mars and Saturn, maybe simpler. You can say, well, obviously this is not possible. I mean, it's going to lead to tragedy or into catastrophe. That's obviously not the thing I have to do. Well, that would be a stupid way of looking at it. A very common way, either, also. And all what is implied is that the chart will tell you, okay, if that is the thing that you want to do, you must realize that it's going to cause a breaking down of Saturnian limitation or shells or something like that. So it doesn't need to mean that it is not possible. But it is not possible to go that way and find a very smooth, easy way. Now, I used to sometimes meet people who said, I'm coming with two shots, they're short and short of a young man or girl. I think we plan to be married. We have an idea of getting married, but we would like to know your opinion as to whether it is a good marriage, a good marriage, or not. We were not committed yet or something. Sometimes they say that. I knew they were committed, so what's the use? But anyway. And I said, look, what do you mean by marriage? I mean, that was the whole day, you know, when marriage meant something. And I said, do you want to marry so that you can own a nice suburban home and have nice children, be a pleasant neighbor and go to club and enjoy life and things like that and retire pleasantly with a good income and so on. If that is what you want from that marriage, I don't think you will get it. That's not the kind of marriage you will get if you marry that person. But that doesn't mean you should marry that person. So it all depends what kind of marriage you think you should have, or you are willing to take the risk of having. It may be that you have an ego which is very sharp, demanding, and that man may have an ego which is also sharp and demanding, or he has a sharp ego, and you have a very resistant, traditional nature to do just like your mother did and your grandmother and so on. And it may be that is the best thing that can happen for all of you, that you hit yourself both till your both egos collapse altogether. But I can't tell you what to do, you know. But those are possibilities. But it doesn't seem to be possible to get a very smooth, peaceful, hedonistic kind of relationship with the way the thoughts are. But that's your choice. It is not that it is possible or impossible. It is possible in relation to what you are or what you want or your destiny. See what I mean? Okay, anything else? One or two more questions and then we stop. Yeah.
In order to move on to a transpersonal way of living, to what extent does one need to break off of one's culture? Does it have to be a complete break? And then also, is it possible to choose a culture or place yourself in a culture or to pick the best of different world cultures and make that your own? Is that possible or is that something you should leave behind?
Well, there are all sorts of possibilities, I think, and I always say to the people, if they ask such question, and I have mentioned about my own experience, that it doesn't infer, they should not infer from my experience that they have to follow it. First, it would be difficult to find a new world today, even though the new world I came to wasn't very new, or at least didn't turn to be new. But no, I don't think severance doesn't necessarily mean that you have to break away. It's an inner state of attachment. And you can remain where you are and dissolve the attachment to whatever is at that place. And if you are dissolving it, if you have dissolved it, then you can return in consciousness to the relationship implied in that situation and help to transform them or transfigure them to some extent with a new quality of relations, of relatedness, you see. And that is, of course, very often what happens. I mean, you, after Toynbee's story of history, where he studied the evolution of the people who become the instrumentality for change in a culture, and later on the creative, what he called the creative minority, but especially the world figure like prophet, religious founder, and so on. It shows that they usually pass through a stage of intense dissatisfaction. Then they withdraw to some kind of a desert in some way or other. It may be a desert in their own room, I mean, you know, and stay there for a while until some sort of illumination or some sort of inner change takes place. Then they return with a message, as it were, to the condition or the culture which they had left. Now, that's very often, of course, what happens. There are cases, of course, where that is not possible or that is not particularly valid. But in a curious way, those changes do, those situations, those processes do occur. And even when you have seemingly broken away from your ancestral culture or situation or religion and all that, it's very curious to see how, in some mysterious way, if your work has significance for that culture, even in the process during which you are completely separate, consciously separate from it, still the connection keep moving. I mean, I don't want to give to what I've done extra importance in relation to what has been happening in France, for instance. But I can trace certain change in style, in poetry, in interest, in literature, and as completely parallel to what was happening in a larger fashion-oriented way in France after I left France. It seems that, and when there were crises, when France was invaded and under the Nazi, I passed through 2-3 years of complete hell and things like that, and things had happened before. There seems to be a level at which the connection is still there, but it is no longer a personal connection. And yet, now, for instance, when, as it were, I have concluded my strictly astrological work with the book Astrology of Transformation, which came about 40 years after the Astrology of Personality, and in between about 20 books on astrology. You know, and my work on astrology, on hundreds, thousands of articles and things like that. Well, about that same time, in some way, a very basic change took place in astrology in France. And now my books are being translated, and 20 of them will be published in French within the coming years. And in some way, it seems that, you see, after having passed through a process, now in the form of books and all that, and I am able to influence in some way the things which I had left. Now, that doesn't need to apply to anything, but it can apply very often to people. I mean, you are born in a certain religion, you go away from it, and you can transform yourself and free yourself completely, and then come back and bring certain a new spirit. That was the idea that Carl Jung stressed very much in his in this consultation, I mean, made the people individuation, what you call individuation process, making conscious the cultural basis of their being, of their subconscious, of their tradition. And then, after having absorbed it, assimilated what was valuable in it, what was essential, living in it, go back to their church, go back to their village or home and all that, and try to bring into it the leaven of transformation. And that's a very, very valid process. But there again, you have to be very careful, because, well, let us say this, that about 22 years ago, the last time I was in France, no, not 20 years ago, the last time I was in France in 1963, though I had a difficult time because there was some problem with my eyes and all that, and the French doctors were perfectly stupid about it. But for some mysterious reason, for the first time, it was the third time I had been in France in the last 4 or 5 years, and I began to feel very sentimental about it when I left. I didn't like it in some way, but I felt that I could very easily, if I had had any something left, if I had some people, some loving situation or whatever it is that would have folded me in, I could have done it very easily. Because I began to feel very sentimental about it for a while. It didn't last. But anyway. So you can take it as a line of least resistance also. Well, one more and then we adjourn for tonight. Okay, well, what?
They're going to let you off.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll see you tomorrow evening. I'll see you anyway tomorrow evening, and we'll hear some of my music. I shall talk briefly, more or less, twice, and maybe may read a couple of poems or something. Anyway, and you can see some of my painting and wonder what they mean.
This is the end of Astrology and Transpersonal Living, Part 3, by Dane Rudyard. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.